Listen to the land, it has a story for you, about people and their dreams and how they made them come true. Listen to the land, listen to the land.
Your visit to Fort Kearney Historical Park now sets the stage for a trip along the famous Overland Trail. Fort Kearney, the most important service station along the Nebraska trails, marks the point where all the feeder trails came together. A man could start west from a number of points like Omaha, Nebraska City, or Brownville, but west of Fort Kearney, he had only one route, the Valley of the Platte. Here we can visualize the whole drama of the westward movement, the Mormons traveling on the north side of the river, the 49ers, the Oregon emigrants, the Overland Stage, and the Pony Express. How many people passed this way? Well, we'll never know for sure, but it's safe to bet that between 1840 and 1867, the year the railroad was finished across the plains, no less than 250,000 people used the trail. And don't forget, these people had animals and wagons with them. What an enormous caravan this made. People who traveled the trail said they were never out of sight of white-topped wagons. One man later recalled that the freight wagons rolled along one behind another until he finally gave up trying to count them. Indeed, this was the superhighway of pioneer America. Now, traffic went both ways on this pioneer interstate, those heading west and the discouraged, disillusioned ones heading back home. Westbound wagons rumbled along the trail, their canvas tops painted with bright signs like Pike's Peak or Bust. Then the wagons crawling east, their tattered tops bearing the sign, Busted, by gosh. What made these people leave their homes and start west? There were probably as many reasons as there were people. But one thing is sure, a dramatic event such as the discovery of gold in California could lure thousands to the trails. Young men such as Joe Bowers, who headed for California in the hopes of striking it rich.
My name, it is Joe Bowers, and I got a brother, Ike. I come from old Missouri, all the way from Pike. I'll tell you how I came here and how I began to roam, and left my aged parents so far away at home. I used to court a gal there, her name was Sally Black. I asked her if she'd marry me, she said it was a whack. Said she to me, Joe Bowers, before we're hitched for life, you ought to get a little home to keep your little wife.
A sense of adventure and romance undoubtedly clutched the hearts of the covered wagon pioneers. Ahead of them lay a trip of about 2,000 miles. At 15 miles a day, this meant between 4 and 5 months on the trail. But this didn't discourage people. The trail became a challenge and a testimony to the sense of destiny which gripped them. Without question, the first weeks on the trail were the most exciting. Everything was new, and even the problems and hardships were exhilarating. The sight of hundreds of prairie schooners lurching over the endless prairie was a memory which time never erased. Although only a short part of their travel was across what is now Nebraska, this is the stretch they remembered in later years, because here they were learning to travel. By the time they reached the mountains, the thrill of travel had worn off, and it became increasingly difficult to find time to write letters home. Hence, we usually think of the westward movement in terms of a long line of prairie schooners crossing the plains of Nebraska. Once the decision had been made to head west, there were preparations that had to be made. How I wish I could have been around then to hear a group of men discussing the type of wagon to buy or arguing about the best kind of animal to have to pull the wagon. The smart ones ended up getting a light, rugged wagon. Upon this, all experienced travelers agreed. But there was little agreement about the proper animal. The argument among the pioneers must have sounded much like a modern discussion concerning the best kind of automobile to drive on the interstate. There were those who said oxen were best. Others said mules couldn't be beat. A few stuck up for old Dobbin. But most of the pioneers ended up using oxen since they were cheaper than mules or horses and could stand much hard use. When it came to getting equipment together for the trip, just about everyone made the same mistake. They tried to take too much. Now, this probably sounds familiar to any mom or dad who's had to pack the family station wagon for the vacation, because the emigrants loaded up with tools, furniture, provisions, all sorts of things they just could not bear to leave behind. But after a few days on the trail, they began to dump unnecessary things, and the first leg of the trail must have resembled a gigantic trash heap. But the travelers had learned their first hard lesson. Keep your load as light as possible to avoid wearing down your animals. Usually, we think of the covered wagons as traveling together in trains. Certainly, there were some adventuresome souls who struck out alone, hoping to make better time if they didn't have to wait for other folks. But most people wanted company, and they wanted the security that came from traveling with other people. One writer has said that a wagon train was really an American village. The ways the people ate and dressed and act changed very little, and they faced many of the same problems along the trail that they faced at home. This is an interesting way to look upon a wagon train as an American village, but one on wheels. By the first week in April, the pioneers were all set. Their outfit is assembled, the wagons loaded, all necessary supplies purchased. There's just one thing left to do, and that is to organize the train. Just like the village back home, the wagon train needed to have some form of government and some elected official. Unfortunately, many wagon trains made a mistake. While some organization was necessary, usually the emigrants overdid it. Elaborate rules became burdensome and difficult to enforce. Men elected to the council, the group which was supposed to enforce the rules, would soon begin to quarrel. More than one wagon train broke up as a result of internal dissension. It was best to follow the same rule for organizing the wagon train as for filling the wagons. Have nothing but the essentials. Have a few important rules which would ensure the orderly life of the train. No more. Now make no mistake, overland travel was no picnic. There were countless things to worry about, but the greatest problem was disease. During certain years, Asiatic cholera raged along the emigrant trails. Thousands died and graves lined the trail. Accidents were common. Children thrown out of a lurching wagon and run over by a heavy wagon wheel. Men injured during a stampede of the stock. But most common of all, injury from an accidental gunshot. Just about every man in the wagon train was armed to the teeth. They wanted to hunt. They wanted to be ready for the bloodthirsty Redskins. But they'd miscalculated on both counts. There wouldn't be much time for hunting, and Indian attacks upon well-protected trains were most unusual. But the men hung on to their weapons, and inevitably someone ended up shooting himself. Now, it's easy for us to say that the wagon trains had little to fear from the Indians, but in the eyes of the emigrants, the savages were a constant threat. Every shadow beyond the flickering circle of firelight might conceal a lurking Indian. Every canyon might conceal a band of mounted Indians ready to sweep down on the wagons. Who knew when the red warriors might strike? You had to be ready at all times.
I'll tell you a tale, though it may be a sad one, of trials and troubles and where first begun. I left my dear family, my friends and my home, to cross the wide prairies and mountains to roam. We traveled 3 weeks till we came to the Platte and put up our tents at the head of a flat. We spread down our blankets on the green grassy ground while our horses and oxen were grazing around. While taking refreshments, we heard a loud yell, the whoop of Sioux Indians coming up from the dell. We sprang to our rifles with a gleam in each eye. Boys, says our brave leader, we'll fight till we die.
It seems to me that the greatest problem these people faced was really a psychological one. That is, the desire to relax their discipline and to take it easy. There was always the temptation to stop for a day or two to rest the animals or to let the young men ride out to explore the country. And it was always hard to get the men out of the saloons and gambling houses which ran day and night at Dobytown west of Fort Kearney. At every road ranch, there was a temptation just to stop, visit a while, and have a few snorts of ranch whiskey with the hands. But the old-timers knew this was a mistake. Consider the Donner Party, which traveled the California Trail in 1846. The leaders of this wagon train planned to follow a route to California, which would save them weeks, so they were in no hurry. They followed the new path, only to find themselves tangled in terrible mountains and forced to cross a desolate desert. They fell far behind schedule, and as they finally moved up the California Pass, snow stopped them in their tracks. They retreated down the mountains and spent a horrible winter in camp. Those who survived the frightful ordeal did so by eating the flesh of those who had died. So the Donner Party was a grim warning. Keep moving. You never knew what delays awaited you on ahead. Keep moving. Make your 15 miles each day, every day. From time to time, the emigrants saw soldiers patrolling the trail and escorting stagecoaches. The boys in blue were a real comfort, because who could forget the terrible summer of 1864 when bands of Indians attacked every ranch and wagon train from central Nebraska to eastern Colorado. South of Plum Creek, you can still see 11 mounds of earth, the graves of men killed in an Indian attack upon one wagon train. A few years later, Indians attacked a Union Pacific train just west of what is now the town of Lexington. The Indians pillaged the freight cars. They found bolts of calico cloth in one of them, and grabbing the end of the cloth, they galloped their horses over the prairie, spreading hundreds of feet of brilliant calico across the ground. Several members of the train crew were killed and scalped, but one man who had been scalped and left for dead was just unconscious. After the Indians galloped off, he came to, found his scalp, put it in a bucket of water. A few days later, he turned up in Omaha carrying the bucket and looking for a doctor to sew his hair back in place. Well, at least this is how the story is told here in Nebraska. By the time the wagon trains reached Fort Kearney and started up the Platte Valley, the pioneers noticed that the land and the climate had begun to change. The reason for this was that they were nearing the 100th meridian. This imaginary line, which runs down the main street of Cozad, marks the real beginning of the Great Plains. A few days more, and the wagon trains would reach the point where the Platte River divided into a south branch and a north branch. Beyond these forks of the Platte, the wagon masters would follow the South Platte, intently searching for the best place to ford the river. Once across the South Platte, they headed north to the valley of the North Platte, and then turned west again, following that river across Wyoming, to South Pass, over the Rocky Mountains, and finally, Oregon and California.
Beautiful Nebraska, peaceful prairie land, laced with many rivers and the hills of sand. Dark green valleys cradled in the earth, rain and sunshine bring abundant birth. Beautiful Nebraska, as you look around, you will find your rainbow reaching to the ground. All these wonders by the master's hand, beautiful Nebraska land. We are so proud of the state where we live. There is no place that has so much to give. Beautiful Nebraska, as you look around, you will find your rainbow reaching to the ground. All these wonders by the master's hand, beautiful Nebraska land. Beautiful Nebraska land. Listen to the land, it has a story for you, about people and their dreams and how they made them come true. Listen to the land, listen to the land.
How would you like to spend a day on the trail with a wagon train headed for California? Now, before you answer, let me give you a couple of things to think about. First, how do you react to clouds of choking dust that fill your eyes and throat? How do you feel about enduring heat which burns through your clothing? And how about insects, like clouds of buffalo gnats, which drive men and animals almost crazy? And then, just to add a little variety, how do you like camping out in a driving rainstorm, which is accompanied by howling winds and enormous hailstones that tear the tent and wagon covers to shreds? Well, these are the things that covered wagon pioneers lived with day after day. And maybe you're like me. I like to read about the past, but I'm not too wild about reliving it. So from the comfort of your home or your school or your modern automobile whizzing along the interstate, let's talk about a day on the trail. Your wagon train probably consists of about 15 wagons. That was the average size. During the night, the wagons are circled. Sometimes the animals are enclosed within the circle. Sometimes they're permitted to graze out on the prairie. This depends on how the leaders of the wagon train feel about the Indian danger. At dawn, the guard sounds the signal for everybody to get up. Everyone immediately sets to work. And after a few days on the trail, breaking camp is well organized and everything gets done quickly. Oxen are yoked and hitched to the wagons. A hasty breakfast is gulped down. Camp utensils are piled in the wagon. And hopefully by 7 o'clock, the lead team heads out. Nothing is so disturbing as the dust which immediately billows up around the wagons, unless, of course, there has been rain recently. Then the wagons slosh through deep mud. But the dust really is worse than the gooey mud. Most trains adopted a policy of rotating wagons in the line of march. One day your wagon is at the head of the column out of the dust. The next day you move to the tail end, and each succeeding day you move one wagon closer to the front and pure air. If the ground permits, sometimes the wagons move in several parallel lines. This cuts down the dust problem a great deal. About 11 o'clock, the train stops for a break known as nooning. While animals graze in the scanty grass, mothers prepare the noon meal and the kids run and tumble, getting the kinks out of their legs. Older boys and girls have chores to do, like picking up buffalo chips to be used for the fire. Nooning also gives the men on the council time to meet and talk over problems which might have arisen along the trail or to talk about the future. One of the most frequent discussions concerned the rate of travel. Emigrants who had cows with them wanted to travel slowly so the cows could keep up. Naturally, the folks who didn't have cows wanted to move faster. Frequently, wagon trains split over this issue, and the cow column, as it was called, trailed along behind the other wagons, which pushed on ahead at a faster rate. Personal quarrels were very common because life on the trail tended to bring out the best and the worst of human traits. Frequently, the council sat as a court to settle quarrels, and it had the power to banish men and women from the wagon train. You think your family gets quarrelsome after several days in a station wagon? Well, imagine how tempers must have flared after months spent along the dusty trails. About 1 o'clock, the wagons are back in motion. The dust is usually worse in the afternoon, and the heat becomes much more intense. Everyone is bored, and most people try to doze off as they bounce along. There's very little talking or singing, just the creak of axles, the grunt of oxen, and the occasional crack of a whip. Those who stay awake spend their time thinking. I can imagine a pioneer mother sitting in the wagon, the head of a sleeping child cradled in her lap, and mother is thinking about home. Or she's thinking about her children, and about the accidents and the disease. A mother might watch her children as closely as she could, but if a child wandered off for a few moments, well, with the many wagon wheels and the dozens of animals, it was best not to think what might happen to a careless, wandering child. Mother had a medicine chest in the wagon. She'd stocked it up with such things as quinine, calumel, castor oil, laudanum, and assorted patent medicines before she'd left home. But diseases which were met along the trail, like cholera, didn't respond to the medicines. So the mothers spent much time worrying about their children and their men. Everyone had a theory about what caused the epidemics which periodically swept the trail. Some said that the wells along the trail spread disease. But who in the world wanted to drink the muddy water out of the Platte River? The tragic fact remained, nobody knew much about preventing or curing diseases back in this day. So to many emigrants, the road became known simply as the Trail of Mother's Tears, and it's not hard to understand why. One woman who crossed the plains in 1852 said she counted 75 new graves in less than a 100-mile stretch. A man said he figured the Grays averaged 6 to the mile the year he crossed the plains. Another remembered that 40 persons died in his wagon train in 2 days. And yet another recalled meeting 11 wagons heading east with only women and children left in the wagons. All the men had died. At about 4 o'clock, the guide orders the wagons to circle. And this difficult maneuver is done quickly and easily by the skilled drivers. Animals were unhitched and herded to grass and water. And you hoped like the Dickens that both could be found at the evening camp. Mom got out her pots and pans, the kids made fires from dried chips, and soon the smell of frying meat and fresh biscuits drifted out over the prairie. One has to marvel at the tenacity and ability of the women. They cooked with things they had brought along in the wagon. Mother couldn't send the kids to the neighborhood supermarket if she ran short, so she stocked up on the basic things like flour, bacon, coffee, sugar, and salt. And with these, she performed miracles. The wagon trains usually had fresh bread and mouth-watering pies just about every day. If you had a milk cow, you put some milk in a bucket. It bounced in the wagon during the day, but that night, you had fresh butter. While the women cooked, the men examined the wagons. They decided what repairs had to be made. Back east along the Missouri River, the smart ones had cut pieces of oak and lashed them under the wagons. And now, if you needed a new wagon tongue or a new wheel spoke, you fashioned a replacement part out of one of the pieces. The wheels caused the most problems, for as you moved west, the air got very dry. So the wood shrunk and the iron tires came loose. If you had a blacksmith in the company, he could tighten the rim. But usually the men took the wheels off the wagon, soaked them overnight in the river so that they swelled back to size and made the rims snug. After supper, for the women folk, there would be time for mending and knitting and visiting. This must have been the best time of day, especially in good weather, for there's nothing that can compare with a western evening. And at these quiet times, the emigrants sensed that life was going on, even though they were hundreds of miles from home. One member of a wagon train remembered that in one evening stop, a baby was born, a young couple was married, and an elderly man died. The whole cycle of life was there. And perhaps before bedtime, it was time for some singing around the campfire.
Did you ever hear tell of sweet Betsy from Pike, who crossed the wide prairie with her feller Ike, with 2 yoke of cattle, an old yeller dog, a tall Shanghai rooster, a big spotted hog? Singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai, singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai. One evening quite early they camped on the Platte, close by the stream on a green shady flat, where Betsy, quite tired, lay down to repose, and with wonder I gazed on his Pike County rose. Singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai, singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai. The Indians came down in a wild yelling horde, Betsy was scared they would scalp her adored. Behind the front wagon wheel Betsy did crawl, and there fought the Indians with musket and ball. Singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai, singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai. The alkali desert was burning and bare, and Isaac's soul shrank from the death that lurked there. Dear old Pike County, I'll go back to you, says Betsy, you'll go by yourself if you do. Singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai, singing to Ralai, oo Ralai, oo Ralai.
Of course, this daily routine could vary considerably. Unforeseen things could disrupt the schedule, like the appearance of a herd of buffalo or a bad storm. Wagon trains almost always lost time at river crossings, and there were delays caused by accidents and quarrels. Francis Parkman went west in the 1840s, and he tells of running into a wagon train that was stopped along the trail. The men were engaged in a bitter quarrel. Several of them insisted that the wagon train stop and camp until one of the women, a member of the train, delivered her baby. Others insisted that they push on despite the discomfort the rough travel meant for the woman in labor. In the 1850s, travel on the trail began to change. One reason for this was that road ranches appeared along the trail. And at these ranches, enterprising men provided supplies and services for the pioneers. One place was known as the Cheese Ranch, because the wife of the owner made fine cheese, which she sold to the people passing on the trail. The road ranches, the military post, to say nothing of the stretches of glorious scenery which the pioneers passed, broke the monotony of the day. And can you imagine how excited children became when they saw a column of mounted soldiers trotting down the trail, or caught sight of a careening stagecoach drawn by six sweat-covered horses, or most thrilling of all, the sight of a Pony Express rider flying over the prairie.
On the prairie long ago, a young man rode all alone. With pounding heart and sweating face, he spurred his horse to keep its pace. But the ride was long and the road was rough. He strived to do his best. Through toils and danger along the way, riding through for the Pony Express. For 15 miles his only friends were his horse and his God. His only goal was to get the mail across the windblown sod. At the end of his ride, when his job is done, he knows he's done his best. He brought the mail across the land, riding through for the Pony Express. Riding through for the Pony Express. Riding through for the Pony Express.
A day on the trail meant drama and excitement, but it also meant monotony and tragedy. Principally, it meant a line of battered wagons, their bleached white tops shimmering in the blistering sun, dried-out axles screeching like souls in agony, tired women, their faces burned and cracked by the stinking alkali dust, and excited children peering out from within shadowy wagon interiors. This was how Nebraska came to be known to thousands of pioneers, as a long, hot, flat, dry stretch of land you passed through to get to Oregon or California, a harsh land whose hardships were to be endured in order to reach the promised lands beyond. But this was the portion of the trail they remembered in later years, for here their courage and their endurance had been first tested, and they'd won. They pushed on to the mountains, leaving Nebraska for a later generation of pioneers willing to try their luck on the Great Plains. Soon the ruts of the wagons, once worn so deeply into the ground, would disappear under the shining plows of the homesteaders.
Beautiful Nebraska, peaceful prairie land, laced with many rivers and the hills of sand. Dark green valleys cradled in the earth. Rain and sunshine bring abundant birth. Beautiful Nebraska, as you look around, you will find your rainbow reaching to the ground. All these wonders by the master's hand. Beautiful Nebraska land. We are so proud of the state where we live. There is no place that has so much to give. Beautiful Nebraska, as you look around, you will find your rainbow.